Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're going to heat things up right off the bat. You've heard us talking a bit about the newest Connecticut Green Bank program to help you put heat pump technology into your home. Well, today we're going to dig into some more detail about this low interest rate, no money down option for heating, cooling, filtering, and taking care of your hot water service too. Then we're going to circle back with assisted living services, focusing on another important state-sponsored program for helping keep your aging loved ones safe at home and well cared for without creating a huge financial hit for a live-in caregiver like a child or grandchild through AFL, the Adult Family Living Initiative. And we're going to close with a very special guest from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, unveiling a brand new and comprehensive report on childhood obesity and how the COVID pandemic is exacerbating the trend, especially for children of color and others in financially distressed households. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Hey, are you an original artist or crafter? Well, original artists and crafters are being sought to participate in Artists Sunday, an arts-focused shopping day the first Sunday after Thanksgiving, the largest shopping weekend of the year. The goal is simple, to help artists sell more of their work during the fall holiday season and to help shoppers find unique, personal, and handmade gifts for their loved ones. You must be an original artist or craftsman to participate as an artist in this program, but participation is free. To learn about sponsorship opportunities or to view the artist's frequently asked question sheet for all the details, just visit artistssunday.com. Well, you've heard us talking about it on our PSAs, and now we're going to really expand on the opportunity for you to save money, save energy, save the planet, make your household energy situation more efficient and economical with our friends and the returning guests from the Connecticut Green Bank. Today, Joe Buonanotta is on the line with us, and we're pleased to have Joe yet another in the litany of new friends that we're making at the Green Bank. He is a program operations manager, actually, at Inclusive Prosperity Capital, and they manage the Smart E program for Green Bank. And if you hadn't heard some of the preview that we've done this about this program, heat pumps are a great way to keep your home cool and enhance your home's air quality. And heat pumps are really the best choice when trying to reduce your carbon footprint, as well as filtering or dehumidifying air in your home. Now, through a new program, there's some low rate financing through the Energize CT Smart E-Loan offered through the Connecticut Green Bank, and we're going to expand on that now. So, Joe, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John. Great to be here.
So, there are actually a number of programs right now that the Green Bank is and your organization is supplementing or underwriting. One involves electric vehicle charging stations. Another is battery storage for homeowners who are looking to install solar and want more control over their energy supply. But you said the Connecticut Green Bank Smart E-Loan offer for heat pumps has really, really taken off. Since its announcement, what now, about 5 or 6 weeks ago?
Yeah, we actually launched the special offer for those three technologies that you mentioned, heat pumps, battery storage, and EV chargers on July 1st.
Oh, okay, several months ago. Yep.
Yeah, well, it was initially intended to launch earlier this year, but due to the pandemic, we put the brakes on the program and then decided to launch it July 1st with really to align with the reopening of the state's economy and the state's, you know, green energy economy, right, to help with that economic recovery, and we've seen a lot of interest on the heat pump side.
Well, for folks who may not be familiar with that type of energy technology, just give us the kind of the elevator spiel on what heat pumps are all about.
Absolutely. So heat pump technology is it's not a new technology, but it's one that's becoming more and more popular this year, especially. So we have a special offer that's focused on a few different types of heat pumps: air source heat pumps, ground source heat pumps, which are commonly known as geothermal, mm-hmm. As well as heat pump water heating technologies. And really, heat pumps are helpful for a few things. They provide year-round heating and cooling, so they can provide air conditioning in the warmer months, as well as heating in the winter. They provide health and safety benefits to the home, things like air filtration and having built-in dehumidifiers. And they're also customizable. They're good for homes that may not have ductwork, so there are ductless mini splits that are great options for homes that don't have ductwork, or if you need to put heat or cool maybe an addition or a specific part of the house. But they're also customizable in the form of ducted systems, so they can work sort of similar to a traditional central air conditioning, but provide both heating and cooling and at a much more efficient level than traditional HVAC systems.
Mm-hmm. There's a safety factor because these systems are all electrical powered, so there's no more gas, no more propane, no more oil that may, in the rare instances that there are malfunctions or issues, can cause a hazard, right?
Yeah, correct. Yep, and that's really one of the many clean energy or just carbon reduction benefits of these systems. They really help you reduce your home's carbon output, and then paired with things like weatherization, so additional insulation or air sealing, other energy efficiency measures. They heat pumps really make for some of the cleanest solutions that are available for heating and cooling.
Yeah, and you mentioned that they also do work on air quality issues because they filter the air.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. So they're really, really helpful for helping to make the air in your home cleaner for you and your family.
Very good. Can you, in just a little bit more detail, walk us through those four options? We're hearing a lot about these ductless split systems, and essentially that just involves, making a relatively small hole in the wall between the outside and the inside and kind of hanging a unit that kind of sits near the ceiling, right?
Yeah, absolutely, and I will preface that with I'm not a contractor, but,
sure.
But luckily I work closely with the dozens of HVAC contractors in Connecticut who offer Smarty loans to their customers, and so those are really the experts that you should connect with to find the best solution for your home, be it a ductless system or a ducted system.
But
on the ductless mini splits, which are a really popular option, you see those all across Europe and Asia, and now more so in the United States. The ductless mini splits don't require ductwork, so there's really minimal sort of impact to your home. They sit typically at the top of a wall, and they're small and sort of sleek. And they come with an outdoor condenser unit that's typically slim, looks like a sort of a smaller version of your traditional air conditioning unit.
Yep.
And they are powerful enough to provide really substantial heating or cooling to either an open space of your home or multiple rooms,
yeah.
Depending on how your home is set up.
Yeah, and you said these can the financing is still eligible for folks who want to add heat pump ductless splits to supplement other energy sources in their home, or do they have to actually convert their whole home to a heat pump system to be eligible for the program?
No, yeah. So this is the financing is just for the addition of heat pumps. So some homeowners do elect to keep their existing heating source as as backup. But Smarty loans can definitely be used to add new heat pumps.
Yeah. Tell me a little more about the heat pump hot water heater.
Sure. So, so a heat pump hot water heater really works the same way, except rather than works the same way as the traditional air source heat pump for heating and cooling, but it's just specific to your water. So it'll provide that reliable heating for your water for your home. But just with a more efficient system.
Great. And of course, the geothermal or air source heat pumps are larger systems for multiple rooms or entire homes. So in closing, Joe, remind people how they go about evaluating and getting the expertise they need to advise them which might be the right system and direction to go if they opt to go onto this Green Bank sponsored program.
Absolutely. So there's lots of helpful information on our program's website, which is just ctgreenbank.com/smarty. And there's a special link for heat pump financing. We've also partnered with an organization called NEEP, or the Northeast Energy Efficiency Partnerships, who put together a really handy air source heat pump buying guide that explains heat pumps in lots more detail, but in a still user-friendly way. So we would definitely encourage interested homeowners to read through that document that's linked on our website. And then the website also walks you through how to get started with a Smarty loan.
Excellent.
You would first source quotes from our eligible contractors, and then you'd get pre-approved financing through one of our 9 lender partners. We partner with banks and credit unions across the state. And then we work with the Green Bank team work with the contractor through the rest of the process to get the project approved and then the loan closed. So really key point is that you don't have to put any money down with this program. So you can finance the full cost and the contractor gets paid directly, and it's really a win-win for everybody.
Fantastic. Joe Buonanotta is a program operations manager at Inclusive Prosperity Capital, who manages the Smart E program for Green Bank. See them or contact them about electric vehicle charging stations, battery storage to supplement your solar program, or the newest Smart E loans for heat pumps. Once again, Joe, thank you so much for your time this morning, and best of luck with the program. We'll be talking to the Green Bank again soon. All right, we're hitting the midpoint here today with a gentleman who's become a really great friend to the award-winning For the People for the great resources he provides. I'm talking about Ron Dickel at the Assisted Living Services. Today, we're going to spotlight a solution to Connecticut's current elder care crisis in nursing homes, as well as the high unemployment rate caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Assisted Living Services is educating families about a state program that pays family members to provide care for their aging loved ones at home. So we're going to tap Ron to tell us more about that. But Ron, you're approaching a quarter century now with Assisted Living Services. So congratulations to you on that longevity. Companies like yours don't stay in business under the same management and structure for that long, or launch component services and agencies without doing something right. So congratulations in combining these two technology services and the assisted living services and sustaining for so long.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you having us on today to discuss a very important program that people of Connecticut should really know about. Well, a little bit of background. Our agency, Assisted Living Services, has been a home care agency in Connecticut for 25 years, and we have a sister company, Assisted Living Technologies, and we utilize primarily wireless sensor-based technologies to help seniors age in place.
Mm-hmm.
And both those programs are contracted with the Connecticut Home Care Program for Elders. It's a state Medicaid-funded program.
Very good. Well, before we get into the important information that folks need to know about this program, and to remind them, we're going to be actually meeting someone who is affiliated with your agency, who has availed themselves of this program and is doing great and caring for her parents after the break. So we're going to come back and meet an actual person who can talk a little bit more from the inside out about how this program has made such a huge difference for her. But, you know, obviously you have an agency that provides support, but can you speak to some of the concerns that you have now with this, you know, lifelong pursuit of elder care, and some of the concerns you have when people maybe want to pay cash, bring in, you know, their aunt who was a nurse somewhere, or a neighbor whose friend down the block has given their parent good care, versus someone who may actually, you know, cost a little more, but like with that cost, you're bringing in a huge amount of security, sophistication, and certification training, right?
Correct. Well, what you're talking about is what we in the industry of home care call the gray market, which is where people utilize like the Craigslist, or they run an ad, help wanted ad, and hire people sometimes, or I should say most often, under the table. And that's really a dangerous way to go when you're looking for home care. You really want to utilize an agency that's registered in the state of Connecticut with the Department of Consumer Protection, that they do background checks on all their caregivers, and that they're able to supervise their caregivers. And that means that their caregivers are treated as employees of the agency. And that's the best way to go. If you're going to do the gray market and spend your money that way, it's dangerous. You don't really know who you're getting. And if you ever do qualify for the Connecticut Home Care Program, they will track how you spent your funds, how you did a spend down of your assets, and it could potentially mean that you're not going to qualify. So there's many reasons why you should use a legitimate agency. I just outlined a few.
Yeah.
And but, that's the best way to go.
But your agency also can be a teaching tool. If caregivers, whether they are on the program or not, you know, if a child, you know, if somebody like yourself in your earlier days, you know, comes to assisted living services and they want to learn how to do as much as they can themselves for their parents, supplemented perhaps by a licensed or certified agency and its support network, you'll also teach people how to do it, right?
Oh, yes. I mean, if with our own employees that are trained as either personal care assistants or homemakers or live-in aides, and certainly we train and supervise the work that they do. And we also, through this adult family living program that we're going to spend more time discussing, have family members, caring ones, that aren't really, you know, they're not nurses aides, they're not nurses. Many of them don't have, you know, background in home care whatsoever. We offer them that resource of how to provide care, how to give care to somebody that needs help with bathing, dressing, toileting, and so forth. So, yeah, to have that resource is immeasurable, to right. have an agency that can back people up and support them while they provide care in home care is absolutely critical.
Good. Well, tell us what we need to know about the AFL program.
Well, this is an outstanding program. AFL stands for Adult Family Living. Back in 2013, it was a program implemented here in the state through the Department of Social Services. It is a program that is a Medicaid-funded program, and it actually allows for foster caregivers that live in the homes of seniors. They could be a family member. The foster caregiver can be a friend of the families. As long as they're living in that home environment and the client that needs the services is eligible for the Medicaid program, and also at risk of institutionalization. Perhaps if they didn't have support, they could end up in a nursing home. That's what this program is about. So it allows foster caregivers to care for seniors in their homes, family members caring for their loved ones in their homes. They are helped to do the type of care that they need by support from an agency like ours. And what it really does is accomplish a few things. It helps to keep the senior in their home in a relative good state of health so that they don't end up being in a nursing home. And, of course, they want to be in their home. They don't want to, you know, transition into a nursing home. It also helps the foster caregiver. And these days, you know, there's family members that are home because of the pandemic, family members out of work, family members struggling, and they're home with a loved one that needs care, and they're giving that care for, you know, free. They don't get compensated for it. But under this program, they can be compensated for it. Mm-hmm. So it offers many different people great benefits. And the state gets great benefit, too, because keeping someone home in a community versus being in a nursing home is far less costly to the state, mm-hmm. and also us taxpayers. So it's really a tremendous program.
And the stipulations, I apologize if in your description you covered it momentarily, but to reiterate then, if that's the case, an individual who would not be eligible would be a spouse?
That's right. I'll go over the eligibility a little bit more carefully.
Great.
To be eligible, you must qualify for Medicaid. You have to have low income, and you must be at risk of nursing home placement and need help with things such as bathing, dressing, toileting, feeding, taking your medication, toileting. Those are some typical examples. The relative cannot be a legally liable relative, meaning it can't be a husband or a wife. It could be a son or daughter or grandson, mm-hmm. nephew, as long as they're living in the same home. That's the big qualifiers. They must be living in that home and providing care to the person to keep them from ending up in a nursing home. Those are the big things that the state looks for in terms of qualifying people for this program.
Yeah. This has been around since 2013 in some configuration. Aside from the young lady we're going to meet after the break, how have you seen this program working? Because we continue to hear statistics about the aging in place population who gets the proper support is the healthiest and happiest and least costly to the taxpayer.
Well, it is. And what we really should be very concerned about is that we have a aging population in this country, and we're going to reach a critical point in the next decade where we're going to have far more people than we can actually have caregivers to take care of. So we really need to start looking at programs like this where family members are willing and able and supported to provide the type of care needed for seniors to age in place. We struggle every day finding resources for caring for our clients. We're constantly advertising and screening to find good caregivers, and you're going to see that more and more as time goes on. But as family members are able to participate in a program like this, it's going to be a huge help in terms of caring for our senior population in the years to come.
Great.
And it is right now. We're hearing incredible stories from our foster caregivers and the clients that we support in this program. And they just feel a huge relief to be able to have support and also to be part of a solution to keep their seniors at home where they really want to live.
Yeah, and certainly, you know, you don't have to stand on the other side of a window or a Zoom screen to visit them when they are convalescing or aging in place at home, which is something that's been heartbreaking to you and me and so many millions of other people. In closing, Ron, folks, with you at least, folks can contact the Connecticut Department of Social Services for more information, but you are also happy to counsel them on this program or in self-assistance or providing them with all kinds of expert credentialed assistance. How do they get in touch? Let them know.
Sure.
How they
Let
can
me
get
give you,
you
I'll definitely for the listeners to know that they can contact the Connecticut Home Care Program for Elders by calling 1-800-445-5394. And in addition to that, you can reach our agency. We'd be happy to help you, give you some guidance and support. And you can reach us at 203-634-8668.
And a website for your company?
It's assistedlivingct.com.
Excellent. Ron DeKeeler. Yes.
One last message that I should give the listeners is that they can receive, by caring for a loved one at home, a tax-free stipend of over $500 a week, depending on how complex the care is that they're giving to their loved one. So this is an outstanding program for people to help others stay in their home and also get compensation for it. I know many family members don't expect compensation, but this is a great program that does accomplish that as well.
Very good. So I appreciate your time and resource as always, Ron, who is co-founder and vice president of Assisted Living Services Incorporated. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and meet someone who has been taking advantage of great success this program that we've been talking about. We'll be back and meet Madeline Ruiz in just a moment. Stick with us. And Ron, once again, thank you. Do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Boquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. For 4 days, from November 5th through the 8th, the Swim Across America Fairfield County Sip and Shop event will be virtual, featuring dozens of vendors who are offering products and services to purchase online with shipping and curbside pickup options. Visitors can scroll instead of stroll and purchase great items from clothing to jewelry to home accessories. An exciting addition this year is the Dinner Party to Go offering on November 6th with a delicious meal for six with food from local favorite purveyors and restaurants. To learn more about this year's virtual Sip and Shop event and to order the Dinner Party to Go, visit sipandshopgreenwich.com. So we're back with our special guest, Madeline Ruiz. She is up in Torrington, and full disclosure, Madeline and I share the experience of caring for both of our parents at our homes. However, at the time that I was doing it, the AFL program was not in existence. Now it is, and since Madeline is typical of many adult children who sacrifice income when they care for their aging parents at home, she is now able to ease that financial stress a little bit by enrolling in the Connecticut Adult Family Living, or the AFL program that Ron was talking about before the break. So, Madeline, hi, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So, tell us about Marcelina and Manuel.
Okay. So my parents, they're elderly parents. They're, you know, they're both in their mid to late 80s. And my mom has several serious medical conditions. And my dad was diagnosed with prostate cancer a few years ago and was just within the last year and a half was diagnosed with Lewy body dementia.
Mm-hmm.
I was working full time at the time that they had gotten sick. And it got to the point where As their health started declining, I was having to come to the realization that, you know, I would have to either, you know, put them in a nursing home. And at that point, it just wasn't an option for me to put my parents in a nursing home. So a friend of mine had told me about the program, the AFL program, and who to reach out to. So I did that, and it's the program has honestly been like a godsend. It helped ease the financial burden for me, and I'm still able to stay home and take care of both my parents and give them the care that I feel that they need and where they can be safe and comfortable.
Sure.
And be able to stay home.
So you,
to me was the most important thing.
Yeah, well, just to, for the edification of our listeners, you were not a you had no medical experience, just the kind of home care experience that comes when young people engage in caring for their older loved ones. There was no no medical training in your background, so you were very typical of the folks that Ron was talking about who are. Availing themselves of this program.
Absolutely. It was a learning experience, but through the AFL and through assisted living services, they're the ones that guided me through the process and how the program worked and what was available to my parents through the program. And it made it a lot easier for me. It took the stress off a lot of of not knowing what's going to happen, what kind of resources are there for them.
Yeah.
And through the program and through assisted living services, I'm able to, they're just a phone call away if I have a question about certain things or just, you know, they call for support.
Yeah.
And I have a nurse that calls every 6 weeks. Well, they used to come, but since the COVID thing,
right.
They've been doing like virtual calls and stuff like
yeah.
that.
So you are one of these people that Ron was talking about who actually got trained by assisted living services and then kind of handed off manage pretty much on your own, but you have that lifeline of having someone who you can call, who you have a relationship with, who has a history of knowledge of your parents' needs. So there is almost instantaneous support available to you 24/7, even though you're engaged in the program now.
Correct. Yeah, the adult family living program. What they offer. Is you know, to give me guidance and to answer any questions and, of course, the support that I might need. If I need anything, they're there to help me get what I need or answer any questions I might have.
Yeah. Well, what's the extent?
And Mary's been great about that.
What's the extent of the activities that you're doing on a typical day with your parents?
Well, my mom, she's more mobile than my dad. My dad requires more attention since he has limited mobility. Mm. My mom can still get around with the help of a walker. She's able to do, you know, some of the cooking and stuff like that, where my dad needs more attention, where I have to bathe him and dress him and feed him and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And you also kind of manage the household?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I take care of all their financial responsibilities. I pay all their bills. I do all the grocery shopping, take them to doctor's appointments. So daily stuff like that, you know, clean the household, just keep everything up to par. And, stuff like that.
Well, if folks that are listening identify with you, in the last mm-hmm. minute or so that we have with you, tell me or tell them what you want them sure. to know about the AFL program.
Sure. I know how stressful it can be to have, you know, elderly parents, and especially when the health is declining. Like my parents, within the last 2 to 2.5 years, they had some very serious medical issues. So I was at the point where, you know, I'm going to have to do something. I'm going to have to quit my job and take care of them full time. And that's where a friend of mine had referred me to the adult family living program. Mm. And so that took a lot of the financial burden off my shoulders, I was able to, you know, give up my salary with no financial stress at all and concentrate fully on my parents and their well-being. So it's definitely, the program is definitely a godsend. And I would suggest anyone or recommend that they look up this program, because it'll definitely change your life for sure.
And the compensation has permitted you to be able to kind of pivot away from your full-time employment and still provides the level of cushion so that it was a comparable trade-off.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Excellent. And like I said, I think the most important thing for me was the fact that I'm getting compensated. I can still pay my bills. And my parents can still live at home, and I can give them the attention and the kind of, you know, lifestyle that they're used to.
That's great.
They're living, you know, they're aging safely and comfortably in their own home. They
Good.
Feel safe. And I can give them the undivided attention that they need and that honestly they deserve as my parents.
Fantastic. Folks, to remind you, if you tuned in late, if you need some assistance, whether in general or some coaching at home, or you want to get some referral to the AFL program, you can get in touch with Ron and Assisted Living Services at 203-634-8668 or going to assistedlivingct.com. Wrapping up our program has been caregiver Madeline Ruiz, an AFL program participant, taking care of both of her parents up in Torrington. Madeline, best of luck. I'm sure they are happier and healthier and safer right there with you and together. So congratulations and thanks for talking about the program. Well, every once in a while, we have the great pleasure of tapping expertise beyond Connecticut, but looking at national trends and how they're reflected in Connecticut. Today is no different, and we're pleased to welcome back a representative of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Jamie Bassell is a senior program officer there, and we want to talk about a report that was just released days ago about childhood obesity, and in particular, something that we have been reporting on here at the award-winning For the People now for practically a decade, really, since this kind of epidemic of childhood obesity really took hold around 10 years ago. Today, according to my esteemed guest, about 13.3% of young people in Connecticut aged 10 to 17 have obesity, and the 32nd highest rate in the nation, according to this newest data released this week. The national obesity rate for this age group is 15.5%, meaning roughly one in seven youths have obesity. So the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation on October 14th released a new report that's entitled State of Childhood Obesity, Prioritizing Children's Health During the Pandemic, which tracks the latest national and state level data on childhood obesity rates. And so let's kick things off with Jamie talking about this important subject this morning, one that is very concerning and very much on our radar here in Connecticut. So Jamie, you know, given the fact that we're looking at this Connecticut 13.3% rate against the national rate of 15.5%, can you give us some context as to what that really means, you know, separated by a couple of percentage points? Does that really mean Connecticut is measurably far behind the national average, or is it really just a shade of gray?
So, you know, I think it's important to have the rates and the rankings. Of course, you know, all states like to know kind of where they're falling, but maybe the, you know, the more important message is really just, I think, how much the COVID epidemic is really underscoring the need for, you know, much more urgent solutions and reform in our systems and policies. So to give you a sense, again, you had outlined that 15% national all. Connecticut is, you know, definitely better than that. So I think that's certainly a good thing. But again, I think the message is that we all have sort of a ways to go in terms of ensuring that all kids can grow up at a healthy weight. So as you referenced, the data at the national level has remained relatively constant over the last few years. And so we see that across the states as well, where, you know, for example, Connecticut, we don't see a statistically significant change from, you know, years past. And that's very true when we look at the national data. Mm. I think what's important to also lift up and elevate, and the report does this, is that we continue to see stark differences in rates across race and income. And these are disparities that have persisted for decades. And what that means is that kids of color, so African-American, Latino, Native American children, are much more overburdened by the epidemic as compared with their white and Asian counterparts. Mm-hmm. And similarly, when we look across income, kids from lower income families are twice as likely to have obesity as compared with kids who are coming from more affluent families. Okay. So again, you know, the message around the persistence in the disparities, and we still have far too high of a rate that's remained, you know, relatively constant over the last few years.
Hmm. Is there some sense based on former Robert Wood Johnson surveys or general health information that mirrors how this national obesity rate in young people ages 10 to 17 kind of compares or contrasts to the obesity rate of adults? Either in those select demographic groups or in general?
Yeah, so I think generally speaking, we know that, for example, if we can get kids to a healthy weight by kindergarten, they are much more likely to retain that healthy weight trajectory well into adolescence and adulthood. Mm-hmm. You know, likewise, we know that childhood obesity puts kids at much greater risk for really severe health conditions that could also take them, you know, through adolescence and adulthood. So, you know, type 2 diabetes, asthma, high blood pressure, and many will carry, you know, both obesity into adulthood, but also will carry those health issues into adulthood. So that's why this is such an important epidemic that we continue to shine the light on and really focus on trying to address and really move the needle in the right direction. Mm.
Have you seen any either anecdotally or verified adult obesity rates either across the general population or in these youth demographic and racial groups, just so we can have an idea of you know, where we stand as a nation outside this group?
Yeah, so, you know, clearly adult obesity is as significant of an issue as childhood obesity is. As a matter of fact, about a month ago, the Trust for America's Health released their annual report that really focuses exclusively on adult obesity. Mm-hmm. So although I am not prepared to speak specifically to the adult rates today, I think that that's an important resource. Sure. And you'll find a lot of the disparities and a lot of the complications reflected in that report that, again, focuses exclusively on the adult population in our country.
Yeah, and you certainly make a critical point in that, like in so many things, catching them early, so to speak, and you know, making good foundational eating and nutrition behaviors, exercise patterns and protocols, and making discovering and practicing good healthy eating and exercise and activity, you know, fun, and stitch it into the greater patchwork of our daily lives, is going to have impacts that are generational.
Yeah, you bet. So I think we want to start, you know, fostering those healthy habits early on. But I also think it's really important to lift up the fact that the choices people make are very much based upon the choices people have. Mm-hmm. And so we need to be really laser focused on ensuring that all kids and families have opportunities to live healthy lives. And so for me, what the COVID-19 pandemic really underscores is the need to think broadly about preventing childhood obesity. So as you articulated clearly, you know, what kids eat and drink and how physically active they are and whether they or not they have safe places to recreate and be active daily. Those are important issues, of course. But obesity is impacted by so many other factors, and it is so deeply influenced by community conditions. So does a family have a stable income? Do they have a living wage? Do they have a safe place to call home? Do they have reliable transportation? Do they have health insurance? Do they have access to high quality, affordable health care and child care? Do they have access to healthy foods? You know, all of those things matter in extraordinary ways as we think about what impacts kids' health and their opportunities to make the best, healthiest choices. So, you know, I'll just say I think the pandemic is really shining a light on the imperative for us to really be rethinking the systems that shape the opportunities that we have. And so, you know, whether it's the food system or our healthcare system or our education system.
Jamie, was there some one or two striking points that jumped out at you in the latest data under the COVID pandemic situation that either differed greatly or were measurably different than things you were seeing or knew about before the COVID pandemic hit?
Yeah. You know, so I'll say that the pandemic, like childhood obesity, has hit hardest in communities of color, has disproportionately affected lower income families, and has really deepened inequities in a pretty extraordinary way. So, you know, disproportionate impact on families furthest from opportunity, on people of color, on people with obesity should really heighten awareness of the need for more equitable and more equitable policies and more investment in prevention. You know, I'll use as an example hunger in this country. Well, you know, I think there's been tons of attention to it over the last 8 months, and, you know, pretty harrowing visuals around these, you know, miles long lines at at emergency food banks and food support. And, you know, that hunger in this country is not a new issue.
Right. Well, it's funny you say that. I was going to say it's interesting you're saying that because I think as we speak here in Connecticut, our lieutenant governor is engaged in a food purveying activity up in the greater Hartford area. So and you're right, the socioeconomic standards that we may all assume are out the window. The people that are queuing up to get even a small box of food to sustain themselves is outrageous.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, I think, again, the imperative to change the food system is not new. I actually think what is new is the sense of urgency and the unprecedented opportunity that we now have to really rethink policies and redesign programs to prevent disease, to better promote health for all, especially, you know, the communities that have been marginalized for far too long. And so, you know, in the midst of this public health crisis, or I should actually say, like, in the midst of, you know, these two crises, if you will, it's more critical than ever that we really do what we can to prioritize kids' health and build a stronger foundation for the next generation. It's been, you know, our food system does not work for many, many people in this country. That's just, you know, again, one example. And I think we all should be fighting for a food system that is sustainable, is nourishing, is equitable, and is just for all. And we are far away from that.
Well, in the last couple of minutes that we have with you, Jamie, has the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation identified a priority or punch list or a prioritized punch list that they are suggesting to policymakers get the best traction on results soonest?
You bet. So the report that we launched yesterday does outline a whole slew of specific policy priorities and recommendations that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation is putting forward. I'll say broadly, you know, given we'll stay on the topic around healthy eating, we're aiming to strengthen and modernize the flagship federal nutrition programs. So programs like SNAP, like WIC, like the school meals program and other policies so that every family in this country can access and afford healthy foods. To get a little bit more specific, we're calling for an increase in the maximum SNAP benefit level by at least 15% during this economic downturn. And we're also calling for some specific expansions, if you will, in eligibility criteria for programs like the WIC program. So today, kids are eligible for WIC up until the age of 5. And what that means is that you're often going to have a gap between the time that a child concludes his or her eligibility for WIC until the time that that child is eligible for the school meals program. Mm-hmm. And so we'd like that to be upped to age 6, which we think would essentially close that gap. So that way, you know, kids would be able to participate in WIC until they're able to participate in school meals and there wouldn't be a gap. Mm. I think it's also, you know, important to lift up, you know, some of the good things that the USDA has done. And one of them that I'll just cite is extending the waiver that is allowing school meals to be served to all kids during the pandemic. And so that was a extension that was made actually now to run through the entire school year. So from September 2020 through June 2021. And again, schools have done an extraordinary job feeding kids, in some cases feeding families and feeding entire communities during these unprecedented times. But they need policy help to continue to do so. And so I think, you know, the extension of that waiver is really important. All of the policies, you know, have proven health benefits, and they would be really helpful in responding not only to the pandemic, but also more broadly in helping kids grow up healthy.
And I guess for any naysayers that say, oh, this is just all going to cost us more money, then I guess my reaction to that is wait 10 or 15 years and see the public health costs if you don't, right?
Yeah, you bet. You know, I'm a person, you know, glass half full. So I think, you know, look, everyone needs reliable access to health care, affordable child care options, and no one, especially our kids, should go hungry in America. And everyone deserves a place to call home. And although these are, you know, ambitious goals and require changing policies and systems and investing in strategies that prioritize health and promote equity, especially in communities that have been marginalized for so long, I think we can emerge from this crisis as a stronger nation, a more just and equitable and resilient nation. But it's going to take, you know, a whole lot for us to get there, you know, enlightened leadership, policymakers at all levels of government, all of us pushing, you know, in the same direction to transform, I think, from the America that we have to the America that we need to have.
Yeah, and certainly goals that we have supported for a long, long time here on the award winning For the People, and outcomes that we continue to strive for every day. Stateofchildhoodobesity.org is where you can read this hot off the presses latest report from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, hot off the keyboard, I should say. And our guest this morning has been the optimistic Jamie Bissell, Senior Program Officer at Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. Jamie, your organization always provides such fantastic and knowledgeable guests. I appreciate you being the latest. We will hopefully be speaking.
Thanks so much. We really appreciate the time, and thank you so much for having me.
Great. Thank you.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.